Don't be alarmed just because the bulletin says that Remington is preaching today. This is not Remington. He hasn't had a horrible accident or something. This is Father Tom, just in case, you know. We had our schedule set, and then we had to, well, you know, this is welcome. This is Stewardship Sunday. It was supposed to happen last Sunday, the kickoff of stewardship season, well, we didn't have it, and I'll talk more about that in a second, but this is the beginning of stewardship season, and with apologies to Andy Williams, stewardship season is the most wonderful time of the year. Can I get an amen? Anybody? Yeah. we took a break to pray for the president's health last week, and the president's health seems to be improving, thanks to God. And so it's time to kick off stewardship season with a sermon. Lucky you. Guys ready? All right, let's go. For those who might be new to Christ Church, or to the Episcopal Church in general, stewardship can seem like a code word for giving, especially during our annual campaign when we are all, hopefully, getting ready to make a pledge to support the church financially over the next year. We run these campaigns every year in October and sometimes in November. We use the word stewardship because its root is steward. Steward is someone who looks after something on behalf of somebody else, right? So in the context of Christian giving, God is the owner of everything, including money, and we, insofar as we have anything, money or anything else, we don't own it, we're just looking after it on God's behalf. So we are going to talk about stewardship today, but hold that thought for a second, because at least in the liturgical churches, I mean the Episcopal Church, the Roman Catholic Church, the Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian Church, we're not allowed to pick just any Bible reading that we want to back up the idea of Christian stewardship. That would be too easy, wouldn't it be? Instead, we have a lectionary, as most of you know, a prescribed list of Bible readings that we must use every Sunday in a three-year rotation. And it can be challenging to take a prescribed reading on the one hand and a prescribed topic like stewardship on the other hand and try to, I don't know, shoehorn those two things in to one. Especially if they really don't have much in common. This year, though, on this particular Sunday, the gospel reading for today does, I think, have something to say about stewardship. So we're going to do that as well. So let's get started. As I always say on Stewardship Sunday, hold on to your wallets. Only just lightly, I promise. This parable is called the parable of the great banquet. And in that parable, we see a king who has prepared a great banquet for his son. And he has invited many people to come, important people. And the king sends his servants out to invite the guests. But, surprisingly, the guests are not interested. And that would have been, in the ancient world, a huge faux pas. and an insult. But in this story, the king tries again. And he sends different servants to invite again those important people. He tried to persuade them, let's say, with the finest food and drink. It's like he said, it's going to be great. Everybody's coming and everything is ready. Please come. But again, the honored guests, they not only did not come, but they made light of it. Right? If it was today, it's like we would say, you know, King, I'd love to come, but you know, I gotta see a guy about a thing. I just can't make it. I've got to work. I've just got so much on me right now, King. I just can't make it. Or, you know, some of those people were more honest. They kind of said, look, I don't even like you, King, or your dumb son. I'm not coming. And for good measure, I'm going to beat up the postman that sent me the invitation. And if you ask again, I'll kill the next postman that gives the next invite. So that's not good. And as it says, the king had them all killed, and he burned down their city. Like I said last week, that escalated quickly, didn't it? But in this parable, the party must go on. And so the king now invited regular people to the banquet, new people, and a lot of them. And those people put on their wedding robes, even if theirs weren't as nice as the earlier honored guests were, but they came, and the party was off the hook. The food and the drink, the wine, the desserts, the games, the dancing. I'm sure you all have been at a wedding reception. You know how it goes. But in our story, just when everybody got ready to do the, I don't know, the electric slide or whatever they're doing today, the king saw one fool who showed up in street clothes. This guy, he was partying and dancing and eating the king's food and drinking the king's wine with no thought whatsoever of manners or decorum. I know you've all been at that party, right? When that one guy, and I'm looking around, I don't see him, so I've been to a lot of parties with you all, and I don't think you guys are one of them, but there's always that one guy, right, who's not abiding by the rules, right? He's, double-dipping in the dip and changing the music without asking, over-drinking, and being a general jerk. And then, despite the fact that it wasn't a pool party, he jumped in anyways. And that's always awkward, I think. And when the host has had enough, that guy always gets tossed out of the party. That's the guy in the parable. In the parable, the king says nicely, "Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?" Notice that the king did not say, "What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here." Everybody was invited. No, he said, "You're welcome, but there was one rule. Wear a wedding robe. Why are you not abiding by that rule?" Everybody else got the memo, right? They understood the rule, but not you. And so you got to go. The party's over for you. So here's a few things. The classical interpretation of this parable goes like this. God is, of course, the king. Jesus is, of course, the son. The servants of the king who sent the invitations out, they were the prophets. And the honored invitees were the ancient Jewish authorities, religious authorities, the priests and the scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They were the honored guests. They're the ones that are supposed to be blessed, to be a blessing to everybody else, who are supposed to lead the world to the king. That was their job. Well, the king has come at last, and the wedding banquet of his son is about to start. But the religious authorities had forgotten about the king, about their purpose. They didn't believe that the king was still the king, and they certainly didn't believe that the king's son was who he said he was. They didn't like the king anymore. They even made fun of the king, and they abused his prophets and killed them. And so, the king got new guests. Now the Gentiles. And now, everybody is invited, right? Even if you were not right with the king yet, just come to the party and we can work it out after. But there still was that one rule: wear a wedding robe. It doesn't have to be the fanciest robe or the most expensive. It can be plain, but you have to wear one. In this parable, we've moved with Jesus from the Old Testament, the Old Covenant to the New Covenant. In this New Covenant, the wedding robe is the life of discipleship, of Christian discipleship. The invitation to the banquet is now open to all, but once you accept the invitation, you put on your robe. You must. So what is our wedding robe? Well, it's our prayers, our worship, our service to the poor, our study of the scriptures, you know these, our fellowship with each other, our rest, and importantly for today, our giving. Those are all a part of our wedding robe. The marks of discipleship that we live into don't have to be perfect, but we have an obligation at least to try for love's sake again and again. That is the life of discipleship. We don't have to be perfect, but we have to try. Your robe does not have to be perfect, but it does have to be a wedding robe. If I could mix a metaphor, the life of discipleship is like the coat of many colors. It's a patchwork wedding robe with different parts. So please don't overlook or tear out the parts that you don't like or you don't take care of, the parts that need more care. So in the life of discipleship, for some, prayer comes easy, but study, Bible study, is hard. Please don't overlook Bible study, even though it's difficult. For others, worship is easy, but service to the poor is difficult. Don't neglect what is difficult in your life of discipleship. And because today is Stewardship Sunday, please do not overlook that part of your wedding robe that is giving, being generous, especially to the church. For most Christians, I think, that is the most challenging part of discipleship, the most challenging patch of the robe. Living in right relationship with our material blessings. In a word, our money, or as is more accurate, God's money that we have been called to take care of on His behalf. Money and possessions are the second most referenced topic in the Bible, in the whole Bible. And it's usually in some kind of warning. Be careful with money. Be careful with that part of your wedding robe. Mend it if it needs mended. Wash it if it needs washing. Keep it clean and ready, right? Every single person is called to the banquet of the king. But you've got to wear the wedding robe. That is our discipleship. You've got to wear your wedding robe. That's the one rule. It doesn't have to be perfect, but please keep it in good repair. After all, you never know when a party is going to pop off. You got to be ready. Amen.